We're continuing our study this morning in Acts chapter 25, and we're discussing the defenses that Paul makes as he has been arrested in the city of Jerusalem in Acts chapter 21, makes his defense before the Jewish people, having been saved essentially from the mob by Claudius Lysias, and then in chapter 23 interrogated by the Jewish court, Acts 24 by Felix, Acts 25 by Festus, Acts 26, as we will study, by King Agrippa. Now, I asked you last time as we were concluding, or I guess introducing our study for today, that we were going to go back and look at some of the chapters with the review of what chapter is it in. Now, normally, I've done this more frequent than we have in the last little bit. But nonetheless, I don't want to neglect this. I think this is crucial. Someone that was in the military, and those of you who are in the military are well acquainted with this, but someone years ago in the military who was kind of high ranking, as a teacher, he said that there's three rules for learning: repetition, repetition, and repetition. And I think that's right. And so we need to know what chapter we can locate things in the book of Acts, and we'll utilize a little bit of time in order to do that. I think it's very profitable. All right. Well, you see on the board, as we review some of these things, and down toward the end of some of these charts, we'll get a little ahead of where we have studied. But the first few of them are going to be things that we've all talked about many times. So you're on target with these. Number one, in what chapter do I read about the ascension of Christ, Betty?
Oh, one.
One. I knew you knew that. Yeah. Melissa, how about Paul's third sermon? I got ahead of you. I'm sorry. I pushed the button too quickly. I'll let you get the next one. Paul before the Jewish Sanhedrin court. Are you sure? All right, that's chapter 23. Yeah, chapter 20. It's been there somewhere. You're close. The conclusion, Randy Childs, of the first journey. The conclusion. Pardon me? Okay. You're right. Yeah. I was thinking the second journey. I don't know why. My brain had a hiccup. But Paul before Festus. Lynn? 25. The horrible death of Herod Agrippa the first. Bruce. Herod Agrippa the first when he died. No? Yes, chapter 12. You remember he was eaten up with worms. And you can read the history on that, I think, by Josephus or some one of the historians. It's awful. The Paul before Herod Agrippa the second. Herod Agrippa the second. Randy Bowles.
26.
All right. Peter's second sermon. Eve?
3.
Alright, good. The healing of the impotent man at Lystra. Randy Childs. Okay, the key word there is Lystra. Yeah, very good. Demetrius the silversmith and his opposition to Paul. Caroline. 19. Demetrius the silversmith and his opposition to Paul. Check that. That don't sound right. Demetrius. Yeah, I guess it is. Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah, that just didn't sound right when I said that. Okay, it is. It's chapter 19. Well, you know, it's kind of nice to be right even if you didn't think you were. So, all right. The apostolic miracles. Now, I know that's general, but we've specified a particular chapter where numerous ones occur. Chapter 5, yes. The apostles arrested by the Jews and miraculously released. Denise. Somebody said it. All right, chapter 5, yeah. The raising of Dorcas, otherwise known as Tabitha, from the dead. Donna, this is one I always have trouble with. No? Who wants it? Becky? 9, yes. Simon the sorcerer. Chris Simmons. 8, the completion of the second tour. Donna, you know that one's yours. 18, yes. Paul with Aquila and Priscilla at Corinth. Now, here's the key word, Corinth. Denise, did I call on you already?
You did.
Oh. Well, in that case, I'll pass it to Rick. You remember? Okay. James?
I'm going to say 18.
18, yes. the first evangelistic tour beginning at Antioch, and this is Antioch of Syria. Tommy, you want to join us? I know you haven't been in on all of it. A little bit later. 13, yes, 13. Paul and Silas at Thessalonica run out of town. Betty Jo? Chris Peters? Yes, 17. All right. Paul's appeal to his Roman citizenship in the face of scourging. Now, this is fairly recent, so who wants it? Jim? Kim?
22.
Okay, very good. Paul's flight from Iconium. James?
14.
Yes. The disciples' prayer of faith. Let's see. Who haven't I picked on? Randy. I picked on about everybody. Yeah, I know that's general, but we have specified it.
Is this the one where they didn't really believe when it was answered?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah, 4, chapter 4. The arrest of Stephen. Kim? 6. Very good. Peter and John arrested and brought before the Sanhedrin. You want to participate on these, Lisa? You got in on late on some of that. Pardon me? Anybody? Okay, 4, chapter 4. Ananias and Sapphira, and anybody but Donna. All right. 5, all right. The blinding of Elymas on Cyprus. Lynn? Yes, 13. Very good. The problem of the Grecian widows. Betty Jo. Okay, Bruce? No? 6. Chapter 6. You're all over. Paul's arrest. Paul's arrest in Jerusalem. Becky?
21.
You got this, yes. Peter and John arrested and returned to the disciples. Now we're all over the board here. Pardon me?
You said arrested.
Released. Well, they had been arrested. But released and returned to the disciples. 4, yes. The famine predicted by Agabus. Remember, he came down from Jerusalem and talked about it. Where's that, Tom? No, a little bit earlier.
11.
Acts chapter 11. Paul at Ephesus. Paul at Ephesus. We just did that. Jim, Paul at Ephesus.
19.
Very good. Gamaliel's advice concerning Christianity before the Sanhedrin. Now, the fact that we got Gamaliel in the picture, we know we're early on. So where is this? 5. Very good. The first sermon under the gospel by Peter. All right, you better get that one. The second evangelistic tour begins. Anybody but Donna? I'm picking on her. All right, 15. Stephen's defense and martyrdom. 7. I'll explain to you why I said to anybody but Donna. Reel that off.
The first tour is 13 and it ends in 14. And then the second tour is 15. And then it ends in 18. And 18:21 is the third.
Okay, see, she's got that down too good, so I won't let her answer that question. Paul stoned at Lystra. 14. Very good. The conversion of Cornelius. 10. All right, very good. Well, and 11. Okay, we want to put those together. The establishment of the church. 2. Very good. Paul's address at Antioch. Now, this would be a different Antioch. Which one? Antioch City in what chapter? 13. Very good. Persecution of the church by Saul. All right, goes forward from 8, so we want to note that. Pardon me? Okay. The arrest of Peter by Agrippa the First and Peter's miraculous release. Carolyn?
I don't know. Is that like 4 or 5?
Well, along in there, yeah. Well, no, I'm thinking different. I was thinking like you. Acts chapter 12. We want to pin that because of Herod's awful death and why Herod had arrested Peter and James. He had beheaded James because it pleased the Jews. And then, of course, in the same chapter, he had intended to behead Peter because it pleased the Jews, and then Peter's miraculous release and the amazement of those who in chapter 12 were in whose household praying?
John Mark's.
John Mark's. And then who answered the door? Young, what's her name? Pardon me?
Rhoda.
Rhoda, that's right. All right. And she thought she'd seen his spirit. All right, Paul brought to Antioch by Barnabas. 11, right. And it's in that chapter that the disciples were called Christians first in Antioch. Paul's vision at Troas. Bruce.
16.
Yes. I don't know why my mind's foggy on that. Paul's speech on Mars Hill in Athens. Randy Bowles.
17.
Paul and Barnabas called gods at Lystra. Key word is Lystra. 14. Very good. The soothsaying maiden cleansed in Philippi. Key word is Philippi. 16. Yes, the reception of the Holy Spirit gifts through the laying on of the hands of Peter and John. Chapter 8. Yes, and what city was that in? Samaria. That's right. The disciples' sacrifices of benevolence. 4. Yes. The martyrdom of James. We just talked about it. What chapter? 12. Yes, you are good. The conversion of Apollos at Ephesus. 18, yes. Paul's defense, including his own account of his conversion before the people of Jerusalem. Key expression, before the people. 22, yes. The healing of Aeneas by Peter. This is another one I can't have trouble remembering. So because of that, I remember it. 9, yes. Beginning the third evangelistic tour. Anybody but Donna? Pardon me? 18. Paul before Felix. 24. The healing of the lame man by Peter and John. Rachel back in the back. James back in the back. All right. 3. That becomes the springboard to chapter 4, chapter 5, and the issues involving their arrest. The voyage to Rome. All right, Jenny. Close. 27. Paul's trip through Greece. Where is Greece? Okay, 20. Greece, we know it as Achaia. Okay, we call that Achaia. It's called Greece in the New Testament, but often Achaia. Paul's farewell speech to the Ephesian elders at Miletus. 20, yes. The conversion of the 12 disciples of John. 19. And somebody relate the relevance of that particular study. Why would we need to not only know where that is, but have great use for that? All right, it's not the correct baptism. So here were people that were baptized, quote unquote, but they needed to be scripturally baptized. Paul at Rome for 2 years. Where do we read about that? Denise? Very good. The completion of the third tour. Anybody but Donna? 21. Oh, she said 21. She's like that. Anyway, Paul on Melita with the barbarians. Now, we haven't studied that just recent, so you know where that about is. Okay, chapter, 28, you're in that neighborhood. The selection of Matthias to succeed Judas. 1. Jerusalem discussion concerning circumcision. Those of you in our authority class, where is that? Acts 15, very good. Paul sent to Caesarea. 23, you're all over it. 23. That's when Claudius Lysias found out about the plot to kill him and so forth. Peter's justification of the conversion of Cornelius. 11. Philip preaching in Samaria. 8. Very good. Disputation concerning John Mark. 15. Yes. Baptism of the Holy Spirit on the first Pentecost following the resurrection of Christ. 2. And then the shipwreck is in 27. So you guys are doing wonderful on this. So even though it's been a while since we did that, you're doing good. I appreciate your work on that. Turn your Bible to the 25th chapter of the book of Acts. the 25th chapter of the book of Acts, where we are, and we're going to conclude with some things in our study this morning regarding King Agrippa. Now, in our previous study, we have noted that Festus has inherited just a bad situation. He's the current governor, replacing Felix, who was very corrupt. And Festus has some honor, it seems, to him. And he's trying to do a difficult task that he's inherited. And one of the problems that he has inherited is Paul's imprisonment. And we note in that connection that these accusers had brought charges against Paul, but not the kind of things that Festus had expected. In verse 18 it says, "Concerning whom, when the accusers stood up, they brought no charge of such things as I supposed, but had certain questions against him of their own religion and of one Jesus who was dead, whom Paul affirmed to be alive." Now, that's where we left off in our last study, and we noted that that became the theme of the preaching of the apostles. And we noted also in that connection that Paul himself, as we have noted, in almost every sermon that he presented, if not every sermon that he presented, affirmed that Jesus was raised from the dead. And we talked about that, and we noted the passages, and we wound up with Romans 1, verse 4, where that becomes the crowning, not the crowing, if some of you noticed that misspelled word last week, the crowning point of the miracles that were performed to establish Jesus as the Son of God. And in noting that, we want to note here that Festus recognizes that. Now, how do you report these kind of things? As a governor, he's responsible to, as we would think, write all this up about why these things are taking place. And in verse 20, it said, "And I, being perplexed how to inquire concerning these things, asked whether he would go to Jerusalem and there be judged of these matters. But when Paul had appealed to be kept for the decision of the emperor, I commanded him to be kept till I should send him to Caesar. And Agrippa said unto Festus, I also could wish to hear the man myself tomorrow, saith he, thou shalt hear him." So Agrippa wants to hear Paul's case. And I find it more than just, I'm hesitant to use the word fascinating, but it is fascinating. The pomp and circumstance that surrounds this whole thing. Here's Paul, and he's been charged, as Festus has affirmed, about religious matters, about whether or not this man was raised from the dead. And Paul had never disputed that. In fact, that had been pronounced in his preaching and noted in these trials that have taken place. So how do you pursue with this thing? And so Festus said that he's perplexed about which way to go with that. And so he's got him kept in jail for the very purpose of sending him on to the emperor. Now, we noted that he recognizes that Paul was not really guilty of any sin. He's not guilty of any crime against the Roman government. So integrity would require that, as Festus is governor, that he fairly and accurately represent all of this stuff to the Roman emperor. Now, Festus told Agrippa that he made requests to judge Paul at Jerusalem. Now, we've noted that, but now we've noted also that would be foolish. Paul's already been there. There's been a plot laid, and Festus is already well aware that the Jews intend to carry something out array with Paul. And so Paul said, "No, I'm before Caesar's judgment seat." And by that, we simply mean by the authority of the Roman emperor. You are the one that is to make this decision. And so he has made his appeal unto Caesar. Now, question. This don't look good for Festus. Festus, I think, overall, as a political figure, and I want to underscore, overall, that doesn't mean he's flawless, but overall, I think he's trying to do a responsible job at being the governor over Judea. But even so, it would sure look foolish for him to send this man before the Roman emperor if he hasn't done some kind of judicial process and written up some kind of conclusion. Now, he wants some help. with this. And so his desire is that King Agrippa will help him with some of this.
Maybe relevant, and I didn't really research this, so I don't know enough about it, but he mentioned his citizenship way back when he was being arrested by Claudius Lysias. Could he have recanted now and said, no, I don't need to go to Caesar? Could he have done that? Or were they bound by the fact that he already said, I want to go to Caesar?
My opinion is they're already bound by that. And so to recant it would have been a negative factor. But I'm not sure you asked about the possibility of him recanting. I don't understand why he'd want to. There's no possible way that he's going to get a fair hearing here.
Exactly. From Paul's point of view.
Yeah.
But would Festus maybe have been thinking that Paul could have recanted in order to avoid all this?
Well, that I don't know. From what I see in the text, from start to finish, Paul's determined to go to Rome. He's been told he's going to Rome, and things are coming together now. Though, as we have suggested a number of times, it was doubtful his intention to go as a prisoner. But it's evident now that that's how he's going. If he's going to Rome, he's going as a prisoner. And so I don't see any reason why he would want to recant it. Now, as far as Festus is concerned, I don't know. That'd be just pure speculation. And in terms of the possibility of that being the case, I don't know. I just don't know. So Agrippa wants to hear the case, and so Festus says, "You'll hear it. You'll hear it."
I just had a question. Might be tapping into your memory cells here a little bit, but this Herod, this is Herod Agrippa.
Yes, this is the second.
Herod Agrippa the second.
Yeah.
So the Herod Agrippa the first was the one that was eaten by worms in chapter 12.
Yes.
And then, which Herod is the one that Jesus saw in Luke 23?
Oh, you are picking my brain. That's Herod Antipas, I think.
Which would be father or uncle? Or
verse 31.
Uncle, I believe. Pardon me?
Verse 31 shows it that it's Antipas.
Okay, of what chapter?
23.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Back to Acts.
Where are you finding it?
23. What verse did you say?
As it was commanded, therefore took Paul and brought him by night to Antipas.
You'll have to tell us where, huh?
31. That's
what book are you in?
Acts.
Acts 20.
23 what?
Antipas is the...
That's a city.
Yeah. That's a city, yeah.
Oh, that's a city.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's okay. That's okay. Yeah, I'm thinking here at Antipas. I'd have to research that. It shouldn't be too long to find that.
As to the question whether Paul would want to recant his appeal, Festus did not say, as you indicated in your second bullet there, there's nothing illegal on a criminal level.
Right.
And therefore, this is the end of the matter right here. When he did not do that, but rather turned to Paul and said, hey, would you want to go to Jerusalem?
Yeah.
Paul knew right then he was not going to get justice.
Oh, yes.
There.
Yes.
So it would not make sense for him to appeal and then to recant, because then it's thrown back to Festus, who's already indicated.
Yeah.
But I feel too politically torn here to really do what's right.
Yeah, politics is not anything new, and we've established that time and time again.
He would have no way he would have said no. He can't that even if he could.
No, I don't think so. And so we've got Paul going to Rome. That's just the long and the short of it.
The reason I asked that question was that this Agrippa the second, we know something about him. Jesus.
Yes, we see that in the early verses of the next chapter.
I know something about the religion that he's curious to hear what Paul has to say.
Yes, those of you in our Tuesday morning class may be a little bit more familiar with the why of that. We've established in our Tuesday morning class that the Herod family were Edomites, and they were, during the intertestamental period, we noted that one of the changes that took place is names, different names were given, and the Edomites were then called Idumeans. and Herod and his family background go back through that train or that heritage. Now, the question is then raised, well, why would Paul expect Herod to have familiar knowledge of the Jews? And why then would John the Baptist say to Herod, different Herod, but why would he say to Herod that it's not lawful for you to have your brother Philip's wife? And I've heard folks argue in response to that and say, well, John is telling Herod that it's not lawful according to the law of Moses to have your brother Philip's wife because incest was condemned under the law. Well, though incest was condemned under the law, the response to that is that Herod was an Idumean. He was an Edomite. He was never under the law of Moses to start with officially. But during this intertestamental time, the Idumeans were compelled to adopt the Jews' religion, but they were not Jews. And as far as their heritage is concerned, they were not Jews. But they were required by the king, and I want to say the king of Syria, which was the rising new star, to adopt the Jews' religion. But nonetheless, when John said it's not lawful for you to have her, I'm very strongly persuaded that it's not because it was contrary to the law of Moses, but it was contrary to the law of God that governed everybody from the beginning. And so he was ultimately beheaded because of that. And you've got a similar circumstance here when we talk about Herod in the 26th chapter as Paul makes his appearance before him. And he says he's glad to have this opportunity to make his defense before him because you know the law. Well, that's right. He did know the law. And we're not talking here Roman law. We're talking about Jewish law because of this background, this history that reaches back into the intertestamental period that the Idumeans were brought under the law of the Jews. But they were not Jews. Okay. Any comment or question further on that? That's an interesting observation.
Well, because he was familiar with at least the scriptures that were prophesying about the Christ.
Yes.
So when Paul puts forth the testimony about the resurrection, he understands what he's talking about.
Well, yes, and jumping ahead into the 26th chapter, when he raises the question, do you you know that these things are true because they've not been done in the courtroom. So we're not talking just familiarity with the Old Testament scriptures. We're talking about familiarity with political and historical events in recent past. This man was well aware of what has taken place. So that does have a great deal of relevance to the study. Any other comment or question on that thing? All right, well, we begin at verse 23, and we see that Paul is before Herod Agrippa, and we want to note just here that though he is a Roman procurator, a king, he is not a very nice fellow. And Bernice, that for years I thought was his wife, was not really his wife, not a very nice lady. And they, too, have a kind of a sordid and checkered past in relationship to each other that we want to note. But first, let's look at verse 23 and read a little bit. It says, "So on the morrow, when Agrippa was come, and Bernice with great pomp, and they were entered into the place of hearing with the chief captains and the principal men of the city, at the command of Festus, Paul was brought in." Now, I want you to see this in your mind. This is not some kind of private something. It's not a private conversation that's taking place. It's more than official. This is ceremonial. This is a presentation with all of its splendor and pride and all that you might associate with that. So we've got King Agrippa and Bernice and Festus and the chief captains, and we've noted that these are men who have authority over 1,000 soldiers, so no doubt they had their entourage. And then principal men of the city, which would represent some of the leaders of the Jews and so forth, they're here. So we've got everybody that is anybody gathered together before Herod Agrippa to hear this case. And with all their robes and feathers and royalty and all that goes with that. So get that picture, if you may, in your mind. Now, beginning in verse 24, after Paul was sent for, it says, "Festus saith, King Agrippa, and all men who are here present with us, ye behold this man, About him all the multitude of the Jews made suit to me, both at Jerusalem and here, crying that he ought not to live any longer. But I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death. And as he himself appealed to the emperor, I determined to send him, of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord. Wherefore I brought him before you, and especially before thee, King Agrippa, that after examination I may have somewhat to write. For it seemeth to me unreasonable in sending a prisoner, not withal to signify the charge, the charges against him. Now, there's just a bundle of information in that that is just incredible. But first, let's talk about Agrippa II, the king of this region of the Roman Empire, this province of Palestine. And then let's talk a little bit about Bernice. First of all, when we talk about Agrippa, I've got some notes here that I want to note, in particular, Randy, in view of your question regarding the relationship of who to who. This is the son, as you would know, of Herod Agrippa I, who murdered James and was eaten of worms in the 12th chapter. But this is the brother of Bernice. And we'll talk more about her and that relationship just a little bit. But we also might want to note here that he has become a student of Jewish writings, which alludes to the point that we were establishing a while ago, his familiarity not only with Jewish customs, not only with Jewish history, but also with Jewish law. And so that was kind of a fancy of his. We also want to note that this is the brother of Drusilla. Just drop that little note in there. Tell me who Drusilla was. She was the wife of Felix. Yeah, the wife of Felix, the second wife of Felix, as some historians tell us. And Herod Agrippa II had a great uncle that his name was Herod Antipas. So, and he's the one that beheaded John the Baptist in Matthew 14, Herod Antipas. But the one that I was thinking about earlier was Herod the Great. Now, we want to put Herod the Great at the time of the birth of Jesus because he's the one that had the babies of Bethlehem killed. And you can read about that in Matthew chapter 2. And we've already talked about the Idumeans and who they were and so forth, descendants of Esau, the Edomites. Now, Bernice, we made this comment just in passing that she's the sister of Herod Agrippa II. Interestingly enough, she would then also be the sister of Drusilla. And interestingly enough, in history, she's known for her affairs. Is that being careful enough? And you get the picture. She was known in history for those affairs. In fact, Josephus records a number of them. He records her marriage to Marcus Julius Alexander at the ripe old age of 13. And when she died, when he died, she married her uncle, Herod Chalcis, and by him she had two sons. And then after he died, she lived with Herod Agrippa, her brother. And many of the historians indicate that that was an incestuous relationship between her and her brother. Herod Agrippa II, interestingly enough, never married. Scholars think that with this relationship with his sister, that was, anyway. And later reported that she became the mistress of a man by the name of Titus, the son of Vespasian, who took her to Rome. And she was sent by Nero, or Titus, rather, is the Roman general that was sent by Nero, you recall, in AD 70 to crush Jerusalem and destroy it. So that gives you a little bit of a background about not only Herod, but also Bernice. Now, having said that about the character of these people, that's going to come back, so that'll be on the test. So you take note of that. But what we want to note just here is in this discussion of the 26th chapter, Agrippa wants to hear the case. All the entourage brought in, and now Paul is presented before Herod Agrippa II. Now, the Jews have cried out that Paul ought not live any longer. Do you find that interesting at all? When you go back and look at the things that they charged Paul with, that he's not worthy to live anymore. Well, what have they charged him with? If you remember back earlier in our previous studies, what have they charged him with? Yes?
Desecrating the temple.
Desecrating the temple, yes. Anything else? That one kind of stands out in my mind. Sedition, yes. Can you think of anything else?
Well, they accused him of teaching against the law of Moses.
Teaching against the law of Moses. Now, do any of these things, besides perhaps the charge of sedition, have anything to do with the death penalty?
Jewish death penalty, yeah.
Well, Jewish death penalty, yeah. But that's not where Festus is. He's not making a determination of their law. He's already expressed that. His determination has to do with violation of Roman law. And has Paul been found to be guilty of anything worthy of death? Well, Festus has already noted that. Hadn't done anything worthy of death. So then why is all this going on? Why isn't Paul just released? You had this on the nailhead, Randy Bowles, a few moments ago. Why hadn't he just been released?
Because Festus is wanting to be political and be able to curry favor with the Jews.
Well, that's it exactly.
We'll say that Acts 26:32 answers that explicitly.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Said in Festus, this man might have been set liberty if he had not appealed to Caesar.
That's right. He hadn't done anything worthy of death. He's not violated Roman law.
Well, essentially what Agrippa is saying is that if Paul had pushed it a little bit more, they probably would have just said it.
Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe so. But at any rate, he's on his way to Rome now. Now, what we want to note here in this instance is that Festus wants help. He wants help in wording a letter to the king of the empire about why he's sending a prisoner to stand before him. And without wording this properly, we've got a real big problem. I want you to note the respect that Festus expresses toward Agrippa, even though we know Agrippa was not all that nice of a fellow. In verse 26, he said, "Of whom I have no certain thing to write unto my Lord, wherefore I have brought him forth before you, especially before thee, King Agrippa." So I want to send him before Caesar, but I don't know what to say.
This is, again, maybe a point of ignorance as far as Roman law. If some Roman citizen appealed to Caesar, was there ever a reason other than the death penalty? I mean, if you were accused of something...
That I don't know. I don't know that.
You were a thief, could you appeal to Caesar?
Perhaps. I don't know. I don't know what the specifics of their law was relative to an appeal. All I do know is that when we discuss Paul's appeal to Caesar as a Roman citizen, I guess regardless of the charge, you could appeal it all the way up the ladder.
I don't know. I've never researched it either, but I would suspect the answer is yes.
Yeah, I would think. Whatever the decisions have been, you could appeal it.
Where we get our concept of appealing to higher courts.
Yeah. John?
So I did a quick bit of research on the topic of appealing to Caesar, and it appears that it was something that pretty much any citizen could do, but it was a huge administrative burden, so frequently things like that would get swept under the rug, unless there was a lot of money or influence behind it.
Yeah.
So clearly there was some money and influence behind Paul's appeal to Caesar actually making its way all the way there.
Interesting. Yes. Well, that could very well be. Very well be. That explains some things. And we've already seen that with Felix's interrogation. He was hoping to gain money from Paul's friends that were coming to him. Okay. Very good. Well, one of the things that we know about Paul early on is that God had already expressed that it would be Paul who would stand before some very important people. And if you'll notice in Acts chapter 9, and that chapter should ring the bell of the conversion of Saul of Tarsus, as he was known at that time. And in verse 15 specifically, we'll back up in that text to verse 13. It said, "But Ananias answered, Lord, I've heard from many of this man how much evil he did to thy saints at Jerusalem. And here he hath authority from the chief priest to bind all that call upon thy name. But the Lord said unto him, Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel. For I will show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. Now those two verses are so very important. Paul's going to be preaching before kings. Well, we've already seen him preaching before a Roman governor. Now here he is before Festus, another Roman governor. And now before the king of Palestine, as it were, King Herod. And now he's going before the Roman Caesar. Now, that sets the stage for many things. Paul before these folks. Festus introduces Paul. The charges. He ought not to live. That's what they want. They want him dead. It's obvious that the Jews wanted to kill him, and they've made their accusations asking for the death penalty. Number one, we've noted that Festus desired to appease the Jews. We saw that in verse 9. We noted that Festus' statements prove that he realizes that Paul is guilty of nothing worthy of death. However, Paul is granted the privilege to go before Caesar as a result of his appeal. Now, on this chart, just very briefly, we've talked about these things, but we know that Festus has a problem. He has to give some kind of justification for sending this man to Caesar and how to word the letter. How do you do that? He's done nothing. All this is, from his perspective, is charges relative to the religion of the Jews. And so how do you resolve this? He wants Herod to help him. So that's the essence of what we have on this chart. He's got to report to Nero why he's sending him. All right. Any questions or comments here? It's a bad breaking point. Carolyn?
Regarding whatever he ended up writing to Caesar, is there any historical record that remains that tells us what?
Not to my knowledge, none.
No.
It would be, that's my word, it would be quite interesting to see what he had to say. Another interesting thing that the book of Acts, we'd like to see have some closure, and we'll talk about this more when we get to the last chapter, but there's not closure. Luke, the historian, just leaves off the history with Paul in Rome. And the interesting events about how he got there, and all of that's some very valuable lessons to learn. But we don't know what happened when he went before Caesar, what was said, what letter was presented, and all of that. That's all incredible. I would like to know. All right. Well, we'll get through some of these questions. If you don't have a set of the questions, they're on the front pew up here. What we're going to do is look at the summary of the paragraphs. And as we've done so many times before, we don't want you to write down all five verses, for example, on this. Don't want you to read me five verses. Just in a brief sentence, what happened in chapter 25, verses 1 through 5. Carolyn?
1 through 5. Festus arrives in Jerusalem. The Jews want Paul brought over there, and Festus wants them to go to Caesarea.
Okay, exactly. 6 through 12. Denise?
The Jews couldn't prove offenses because Paul hadn't really done anything.
All right, they don't prove their offenses, and Paul makes his appeal to Caesar. Yeah, that's it. Verses 13 through 22. 13 through 22. Jim?
Paul before Agrippa and Bernice.
Yes. Yes, and then the conclusion, verses 23 through 27. Anybody?
Paul before Agrippa.
That's right. He's brought in all the entourage and all that takes place. Important people in this chapter include Festus. Who is he? Randy?
Governor.
Who do we replace?
Felix.
That's right. And then the chief priests and principal men. Who are these? Yes, these are the representatives of the Jews. That's right. The chief priests and principal men. Of course, we've got generally characterized the Jews, so we know who they are. And then Caesar. In this chapter, which Caesar was it? Augustus, you know what? You're giving the answer that I gave in the class. I've worked on that a little bit more. I don't think it was Augustus. I think it was Nero. Oh, your translation says Augustus. Okay. Well, maybe I'm mistaken. I may have to go back and research that some more.
Be aware that the word Augustus is not necessarily...
Yeah, that is a title. We noted that and are going to discuss that in our Tuesday class.
Nero's first name was Nero, but in part resident was Claudius, Augustus, Germanicus, or something. So
yeah.
Okay. He's still talking about Nero, who ruled until 68.
Yeah. So, Denise, you're not wrong. No, I don't think that if we're thinking of that as a name, then yes. But if we think about that as one of a number of titles that the Emperor of Rome wore, then yes, that would be correct. But specifically, when we're looking at the man, I think that the correct answer to that is Nero. I think, Chris, you talked about that a little bit in the previous class, and I was wrong. I meant to talk to you about that. But I did go back and look at that, and I believe it's Nero who was the emperor at the time. Okay? And the irony of that is because we know that Nero did a whole lot of bad things during this time and then shortly after this time.
He went from hot water to hot water.
Well, essentially. Yeah, essentially that's true.
Augustus Nero.
Pardon me?
Augustus Nero.
Well, yes, like I say, the term Caesar, the term Augustus, these are titles. The man's name was Nero. Okay. Pardon me? Well, that's just the title of his role. That's what like calling him king. Okay, that's his role.
Augustus was emperor from 63 BC to 14 AD. Commodus 161 AD to 117. Nero was 37 to 68.
Okay, that put us right in there. Yeah. That put us right in there during Paul's first Roman imprisonment. In fact, during Paul's second Roman imprisonment.
Okay.
All right. You can research that if you'd like and just have fun with some of the confusion of the titles versus names. Okay. We'll start with that next time then.